Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is Marc-Andre LeBlanc. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Jay.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, and you?
I am super. So, this is your second time on The Meta, I believe?
It is, yeah.
And for those who didn't get a chance to listen to the last episode, can you go ahead and introduce yourself again?
Oh, for sure. So I'm Marc-Andre, playing out of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Been playing War Machines since the Mark II field test, so coming up on roughly about 10 years now. It's been a long time with this game. Played pretty much every faction, started with Krix, Signar, but really just sort of branched out into everything over time, but that's just how I roll. Currently playing a lot of Vassal.
Yeah. As I recall, I was doing it for a while with Keith and with Josh, and then it went on kind of a lull, and you were one of the first people that was an interview when we restarted, right after you won Walk and Load.
Right, yeah.
Playing Iona back in the day when she was the dominant force in the meta.
Mm-hmm.
So, real quick, the format of the podcast again. We're going to talk for around 45-50 minutes in this episode. We'll have questions from the Patreon supporters, and then we will continue the discussion in the bonus episode, where if we have more Patreon questions, we'll do that, or I'll have some questions for you as well.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
All right. So I told the Patreon supporters what you've been playing lately. Do you want to give a quick rundown of some of the stuff you've been playing of late?
For sure. So, both in a couple of recent tournaments and on Vassal, I've been mostly focusing on Flame in the Darkness. Mostly been playing Striker 2 and Striker 1 in Signar. That's a very solid pair. And then in Mercs, I've been playing Fiona, primarily with Flame in the Darkness again. A little bit of regulars. She's great there too. And some of the very recent releases obviously pump that theme up. Aurora 1 is really interesting in the new, you know, Krix Vergence theme. Strange Bedfellows. And that's mostly been it. A little bit of Aurora 2. And Osram and Thexis for like a couple games, but I can't say I love that. So primarily Mercs and Signar, I'd say, what I'm focusing on right now.
Okay, well, I mentioned Thexis when I was giving the summary, and so the first question is from the user Cephalix Breakfast.
Oh, yes.
And he says, "Sing me Thexis's praise, Marc-Andre LeBlanc, baby."
He might
be talking to the wrong person for this.
it's very possible. So I actually copied his list. He said for OTC, which is the Ontario Team Championship, just a bit over a month ago, they had sort of like a pre-OTC, like a single man steamroller. So I took Fiona because I wanted to try her out with the Nemo 4, and then I took Thexis. So the game I had with Thexis in that tournament, I found basically I was just amazed at the squishiness of the heavies. Which kind of goes without saying, right? Their stats kind of speak for themselves defensively. But it was really something else to see it all put on the table. Now, I'll qualify it with the fact that I had to play against Osram with this Thexis list, which means you basically don't have a feat, which obviously hurts a little bit, to say the least. But what I will say is having TK with Void Archons was fantastic. And just being able, you know, to manipulate your opponent's models with the feet, the few that could still be affected by it, because most of Osram's army is sturdy and therefore can't be pushed. But just being able to TK stuff around, give your Void Archons extra threat was really strong. The game basically ended pretty quickly. Like, he kind of swarmed me with, like, invincible heavies. And I go, you know what, even with the damage buffs available and the theme, I'm not really going to crack those drillers and that Earthbreaker. But I was able to actually use the feet to push like a bunch of dwarves in the line so that a Void Archon could go in, get three souls with his spray, and then teleport on Osram, And doing that with both voids actually still let me get the kill. That said, I really was just really disappointed by the monstrosities. So maybe now, you know, with the addition of Asphyxius Ford, like, I don't know if you've had the chance to see him play on the table, but he changes things a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just with how hard he hits. And that, again, was the thing I felt was lacking from the Thexis list. So, and it kind of changes too when you can have Asphyxius run like Colossal if you want. So now you're basically just taking all the best parts from the Cephalix theme, which is like access to pretty much any Merc unit you want. You have TK, you have a caster with tons of like, you know, Rampager and Hexblast. Like, he's got a really good toolboxy spell list. And then you're saying, well, okay, here's Asphyxius running a Blockader or something, which again, you can use the feat to like line up the sprays like perfectly. So that'd be something I'd want to try, but it's a very different list from what I was playing. So it's all theory right now.
So in the Theory Dojo, which is a lot of people's favorite place to be, mm-hmm. What would you say would be some successful keys for a successful Thexis list?
Right. Don't focus too much on the monstrosities. A couple is fine, maybe three. You know, get you some arc nodes and whatever. Really just focus on running Asphyxius with your Colossal choice. I mean, he can take what? Take Naxium, Conflux, Blockader, Galleon. I guess you could take a Kraken. But I would think either the Galleon or the Blockader is probably your best bet if you're going to have him run a Colossal. Well, he's also like tanky enough, especially with D-Sala. Like, he's not just going to get randomly killed. You do have to watch out for spell effects that manipulate, that'll let you move around models. On the enemy side, like, I've seen more than once now Gatsby get Dark Seduction by an Inferno player.
Oh no.
Yeah. It's an effective counter. It's just a, you know, Agathon and Ragna both being able to do it. It's not something they can do to your Warcaster. It's certainly something they can do to him. So definitely have to keep an eye out for that. Because if you're running like a 50-point module, you know, between a 60s and his Jack.
Right.
A Jack that Thexis cannot reactivate. you have to be pretty careful.
Right.
But I think the Galleon and the Blockader are both interesting because, like, between the AoEs and the sprays, you get, like, good value out of the feet when you're grouping everyone together. So I think, like, you know what I mean? Like, being able to line up, like, an entire unit and just clip it all with, like, a spray or two just seems really strong to me. And who doesn't love TK and D-Cell on the caster and X-Blast? And you just got a lot of, like, good toolboxes. So, you know, that kind of list obviously starts to fill up really quickly. Because you're looking at, like, what, like, 49 or 47 points with the Blockader and Gatsby, and then you've got your two Void Archons, which are kind of, like, non-negotiable. So they got their 16. Throw a couple of heavies in there. After you're done your requisition choices, you might be able to take, like, two units of Kayazi Eliminators with a Dominator each. That's something I'd try out. Obviously low on the model count, but Asphyxius really makes up for that, I think. His unit just gets so much done.
Yeah, I think people are going to have to be putting some thought on how they're going to be dealing with Asphyxius in the current meta.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that too. I mean, I think there's some good answers to him right now, but he's just been very impressive to me so far.
All right, we will probably circle back around to that, but before we do, let's get to the next question from Patreon. So, Grey Lord Dave says, okay, so you have lots of experience with Flames in the Darkness. What does Urkova 1 have to offer to that theme that makes it A, different, and B, better than the other versions of that theme? I get the feeling that the Urkovas may be the casters who unlock the theme the least effectively, and I wondered if you had any insight into them after having played Fiona and the Strikers.
That's a great question, because she plays, like, very differently than Fiona and Striker 2. Definitely super different from Striker. Because, like, she's, you know, Striker's all about aggression, whereas Zerkova really doesn't have any threat extension. She doesn't really buff, like, to hit. She's really more about the Cloud Wall, the feet, Ghost Walk, and then her really crazy ability to sling spells. You know, you're relying on the Lancer to rip that 15-inch Hex Blast whenever you want it. Rerolls on Frost Hammer off of that arc note are also incredibly strong. So I think you're bringing, you're trying to play a very a much slower game than Striker 2. You're basically trying to deny your opponent from doing too much with the cloud, between the cloud wall and the feet. The feet is the best flame counter to guns, by a long shot. Like Fiona, yeah, she can kind of get in there and like try to deny the shooting. But Zirkova, you know, if she's got a piece of LOS blocking terrain, she just shuts it down, 100%. Fiona's kind of vulnerable to stuff like knockdown, on her feet. Zirkova is not at all. Because even if she's knocked down, you literally can't shoot her if you're within 14. Obviously there's a caveat for like stuff like Sloane, is a problem. But also having, Sacred Ward on your caster is really nice into things like Agathon. Right, like you're not just gonna die to a dark fire assassination.
Right.
Can't happen. So like defensively speaking, she is likely the strongest. And similar to Fiona, I would say, because Fiona's got the Dark Rituals thing, she's got the very far reach with her spells. Usually, you know, her battle group I'm seeing like Gallant and a Lancer. Pretty typical. So I think what she brings to the table, maybe more than the others, is resilience to shooting. Obviously, Striker 2 kind of has that with D-Cell. Especially into lists that have, like, mid-ranged attacks. So I'm thinking, like, Crucible Guard with all their sprays. Which, of course, sprays are kind of the best guns in the game anyway. So having Zirkova being able to shut that down 100% is really something. I think she kind of competes a little bit in the anti-shooting range with someone like Old Witch 2. But you're bringing a pretty different list where, you know, you're bringing like multi-wound, really hard to kill models between the Archons and Resolutes. Or maybe you're playing Legion Lost Souls who kind of have their own like stickiness on the board, you know, with the Bloodbound. Whereas really Doom Reavers is all about that aggression and that like single wound squishiness. So I think if you're looking to play a very defensive list that sort of castles up and drags out a long game, you practice the list so that you can play it quickly, maybe get a clock advantage. That's where I think Zirkova is going to shoot.
So I know that you've played both the Strikers a little bit within Flames. Has Striker 1 felt like very much of an effective time walk with his feet, or do you think that it's just very different with what Zirkova 1 brings?
So I will say that yes, he has felt extremely strong. Specifically due to, you know, you throw out these arm 25 Archons, your arm 27 Blockader, your arm 22 Resolutes. So there is a similarity there, in the sense that you can often feat, just throw your army at the opponent and they can't do anything in melee or at range, usually. It's like better against guns because the type of numbers you're dealing with, like top 13, 14, 15, you know, 16, just completely bounces off armor 25 or 27. Your opponent's better to just flip the clock. But the thing about Striker 1 is he's honest. Like, what you see is what you get.
Right.
So I think like the skill cap for a Zirkova list is going to be higher. The ceiling is going to be higher. Because if you start manipulating her spell list, you start maximizing it and putting clouds in the right spots and sniping out those key solos, with spells. Cause like, Striker 1 can do it with a sniped Damrite Archon, but there's shield guard everywhere. So it's like kind of limiting there. If you're looking for a defensive list with a little bit more trickiness, Zirkova is still going to be your go-to for Flame. Of course, most of the models are interchangeable. So like, if you just basically buy the casters, you kind of like try out what you prefer. But I think Zirkova also with Ghostwalk just brings like some nice flexibility. Where Striker 1 is like, here are my three upkeeps, here's my feet, watch out for Earthquake, and that's basically what the caster does. Like, he's very meat and potatoes. It's not to say he's bad. I actually dropped him more, found myself dropping him more than Striker 2 at OTC, just because the team format lends itself better to gun lines. So then if you're playing a really strong answer to gun lines, it's like even better. And so you just see more of them too on the table. Like, you know, you're seeing people run like two double Trident lists. Like, well, Striker 1 kind of like rolls that over. But anyway, I think in like a steamroller, like a single person event, the flexibility of the Zerkova one brings is really, really key.
Okay, so next question is from Seto Midor. He says, what are the top five lists in the game, and which other lists is the biggest dark horse?
Oof, top five lists, eh? okay, that's definitely a tough question to answer. So for me, the one that immediately springs to mind is Sirenia Faithful Masses. We saw it a lot at OTC. The ATC lists, you know, that were published on Conflict Chamber, didn't get to play them, unfortunately, but they were up there. You know, Sirenia was the most popular caster by a decent margin, if I remember correctly. It's a list that really doesn't care about enemy shooting, that brings incredibly accurate and powerful models, like with the Avatar and the Archons, Positive Charge and Hand of Vengeance, just like turns that thing on like crazy. You've got Viable Resolve on the Avatar, and you've got the Rockwall. And I think Rockwall is like, everyone's kind of clued in now to how strong that is. Just being able to deny landing spots for most models, but especially huge bases. I won't go into too many details, but our so at OTC, if you remember, a friend of mine, Chandler, he hadn't played War Machine in like 4 months, and he just played Sirenia every game, and you know, just sort of rolled over everyone he played it against. So for me, Sirenia immediately springs to mind. Free initiates that you ignore shooting too. Like there's just so much of the game you have covered there. So yeah, Sirenia certainly up there. I think you have to talk about Fiona. Befuddle is insane. Her feat is really strong. Hard to say if it's Irregulars or Flame. I prefer Flame in the Darkness, but I'm seeing a lot more Irregulars now. I don't think you're going wrong either way. You're just playing two pretty different lists. Like Irregular is kind of using her whole kit, I'd say, a bit more, whereas the Flame build for Fiona is like completely going all in on like the feet. The fact that like those Archons are literally immortal on her feet. You can like throw a feet at, like under her feet, you can throw an Archon at like a Supreme Guardian and it literally can't hit it with attacks. Like, so you're really leaning on the survivability of the solos when you play in Flame. But personally, I prefer that. So Fiona in one of those two flavors. I'm leaning towards Flame. Number three, it's hard, not to mention Agathon. Infernals in general, spawning mechanic is super strong. He puts so much pressure on the enemy caster. And his skill ceiling is, through the roof. The things you can do with Dark Seduction and Hellmouth, being able to cast both in the same turn, same activation, I should say, because you might be casting other spells out of activation with him. When you see your opponent, because I do play a bit of Infernal, so you see your opponent, they spend all this time mitigating, like, the Hellmouth, the juicy Hellmouth pull, either by spacing out their units or what have you. And then you go, okay, well, I'll Dark Seduce that model into the Hellmouth range of all these models, and now Hellmouth. And I just killed half a unit, and they're RFP'd, and, like, your opponent just goes, well, why did I even bother, like, trying to defend against this? The summoning mechanic in general is just really strong, right? You're making free-ish beasts throughout the game. So he's probably number three for me. After that, you probably have to talk about Kruger 2 still. Obviously, he's taking some hits with like the anchor objective. More models picking up Sturdy. But at the same time, the Well of Ouroboros, Chuck Dogwood, the Hermit. And there's all just these like great releases that have helped him either be more survivable or extend the coverage of his feet and Windstorm. And Chuck Dogwood just gives you these like Match 7 and Rat 7 Wolds, which is a huge bump. So he's gotten a lot of love even recently. And he's just, again, a high spell cap caster where if I could manipulate your... you just manipulate your opponent's things and you play that control game, lean on scenario. It's just really strong. Limiting myself to five is tough, but if I go for the fifth right now, I am a big fan of Vlad 2 with Doom Reavers and Wolves of Winter. Just the amount of pressure and aggression that list puts out, the high damage output, the accuracy, the random cloud removal tech. And it's a very straightforward list. You know, Vlad just kind of sits back, keeps spells, throws it out there with Arcane Might. Just really strong. And he's just a good answer into battle group heavy lists like Infernals, Grimkin. He's like the damage output of those Doom Reavers just speaks to itself in some matchups. As far as the Dark Horse, there's only one list that comes to mind, and this is Tanith. I don't know, Jay, if you've heard much talk about Tanith lately.
A little bit, yeah.
So this is one of my good friends from Montreal, and now current WTC teammate, Nick Rattel. He has been playing Tanith Secret Masters, and he has been on an absolute tear with it. For those who don't know, and I don't blame you if you don't, Secret Masters basically lets you play minions as many as you want. Crucially, you can sacrificial pawn to your warlock, to any warrior minion model. So he's playing it with four archons, two Dunian and two Primal. And it's got this weird interaction where when you take the Hermit, you can sac pawn to the Hermit, which includes sprays. So it's a list that's where your caster is basically impervious to guns. Tanith has a great gun, her 4-inch Shadowbind AoE, which is great at controlling battle engines, which are, of course, super prevalent between Supreme Guardians and Tridents and whatever. Like, I think he originally built it as an anti-ret list. But, of course, with Affliction as well, it's really strong into Zal, where you can, despite the armor value of the Immortals, you can kill them. And it's got this cute interaction where throughout the game, you know, she's sac-pawning to the Hermit. Or the other black clad models in the list can also sac pawn to minion models, so you might be sac pawning with like your black clads, wayfarers or what have you. And then, you know, maybe one of the models you brought died. I think he brings right now a unit of procreators, sort of his skirmishing unit. One procreator dies, and it's in the command range of Duty and Archon. And now the Hermit heals D3. And if you'd never played against it, the healing part of the Dunian Archon's aura is anywhere on the table. That, like, the model has to die in its command range, but the healing goes anywhere the circle player wants.
Okay.
So it's got the very sort of like upsetting interaction where like a Crowgrader dies and then, you know, 30 inches away, a model heals. Might be this, like, yeah. I don't know why it doesn't have a range on it, but it doesn't. You get things like, well, the Dunian itself can cancel a damage roll, right? So
right.
On a living warrior model, it's important because it means you can't save your primal archons. But when a Valkyrie like takes a shield guard, which are also, you know, they're also on the list, and you go, oh, okay, it takes no damage. That's a shield guard you have for next turn. So just super resilient into shooting. The primals are fantastic too. I don't want to give away every trick of the list, but really, you know, between the counter charge and the shadow bind bubble, where if you end within three, you get shadow bound, and even a reality anchor. It comes up on a 12-inch bubble of no summoning against Infernals. It just has a lot going on, and it's all this Dark Horse stuff that, like, you probably have never played against, and he has played it 50 times, and he is going to educate you when you face it.
So, to follow up a little bit more on this question, one of the lists that was obviously very dominant in the last WTC was Zal 2 Exalted.
Yes.
Do you feel like the meta has kind of moved on from that, or that they've kind of learned how to counter that at this point?
So I kind of felt like I should almost preemptively justify why I didn't say it. So Zal 2, don't get me wrong, obviously very strong, very good feat. Great models, Supreme Guardians are extremely strong. Recent, like Flames, for example, really brings a lot of tools to mess them up. The Thamrite Archon, the soul removal, is just the greasiest ability, where, especially if you're playing a caster like Fiona, where you just strip that Supreme Guardian of Souls and you befuddle it the other way around, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. You're also stripping souls so that, you know, the recursion engine slows down or stops almost completely. But other flame lists, just by virtue of having that Thamrite Archon or two, just gives huge problems to the recursion and the arcane vortex that they're usually relying on, like, to stay safe. Same thing with the car. You strip his souls off, and now, you know, he's just on 18, like, who cares? So, the Thamrite Archon, in a nutshell, takes away a lot of his stock. But also, like, the popularity of Omodamos I think has made things rough for Zal. Those ARM 21 monstrosities don't really care too much about Pal 13 charge. Obviously the solos scare them. But the actual, like the chaff, or, you know, I don't really want to call Immortals chaff, but they kind of bounce off the heavies. On top of that, I would say, again, actually that Tanith list, if that's in a circle pair, it absolutely destroys, Immortals. And I think we're seeing like a swing back towards like anti-infantry tech in general. So like if you manage the Immortals, and if you're able to force Zal to feet maybe earlier than he'd like, because I think the really strong players in Zal too, like they hold the feet, right? They wait. They're like, well, okay, yeah, I lose a couple of Immortals, and you know, if they come back, maybe I net like lose two, but it's way better if you wait that turn to feet. But if you have enough guns in your list, you actually pressure the Zal player into feeding sooner, and then it just means that the Supreme Guardians may be less effective the turn after. So I think that as we move towards lists with more shooting, and again that soul manipulation tech that specifically Flame brings to the table, it helps make that list way more manageable than it was before. Because a year ago, you know, even 6 to 8 months ago, like it was a really, really strong list to play against. It still is, but there's a lot more tools to deal with it.
Okay. So our next Patreon question, we are again back to Suffolk Breakfast, and he says, on Fiona builds, could you get into the relative strength of her irregulars and flame builds, and maybe specifically the difference between the strength of a list in a vacuum and strength in how it opens up and rounds out your coverage as part of a pair?
Right. So I think in both instances, because like Fiona's maybe biggest issue is strong opposing gun lines. Now flame means you're usually gonna be playing with like 6 to 10 shield guards. Irregulars, you're bringing, you know, one, maybe two, maybe three. So resilience against lists with not lots of non-spray shooting is definitely something you get with Fiona, and her feet sort of like helps cover sprays as well, because of course if you feed aggressively, you catch most of like a Crucible Guard army with her feet. Well, the sprays aren't going to be doing too much. Obviously you still have to watch out for things, but anyway. So that's definitely one strength I think of the flame build, is you can sort of mitigate where she's a bit weak, which is against guns. You also, like I sort of was mentioning before, you can lean so hard on the solos, and specifically the two Marwyn Archons. You know, Death 16, Armor 20, effectively, and one less die to hit and damage. Like that is really difficult to kill. Maybe you've got some terrain in there too, like a wall is ideal, but they're just really tough to take out. So it lets you play a pretty strong attrition game there. You just get to play a much tankier list, and I think I prefer to play a more defensive style list, so it kind of speaks to me a bit more. A couple weaknesses, though, of going with Flame. A, your cultist choices are horrible. You have the Devil Shadow Mutineers, and you have Mechanics. That's it. You know? So I often find myself wanting to take, like, a min Mechanic unit, because you get the free upkeep, and of course you get the free Arcing. But finding that 3 points is pretty tough when you're spending 32 on Archons already. So, you know, it's almost half your list is already spoken for, in my opinion. So that's an issue, you know, not having any really good cultist choices. Obviously mercs, you get like, or non-flame, especially irregulars, you just get like, kind of get to play in the sprinkler. And then the rest of your list is kind of all these high value solos. So again, you don't really want to be like using dark rituals through your archons unless you have to. But don't get me wrong, you get to, and you have like the fun, thing of having like a true sight arc node with the Thamrite archon. Now, you don't have Silas, so that's definitely another issue, but the rerolls and the Thamrite are, in my opinion, kind of more than make up for it. So I guess to summarize that, better resilience against shooting, you really get to abuse the defensive part of her kit, which is her feet. But the downside is cultists, you really kind of have like poor choices there. And you also don't get access to the newest toy, which is Nemo 4. who really highlights. So if we move over to regulars, I mean, Nemo 4 highlights how silly Befuddle is between Watcher and the countercharging Toro in his battle group. So like the threat range on that is of course kind of silly. I didn't optimize it, but you can get like a 24-inch charge with your Toro.
Right.
And killing two models along the way with the Watcher and the countercharge attacks. So that's something your opponent has to keep an eye out for. And then it's a POW 20 Toro because of Lightning Shroud. So that's definitely one of the strengths. The other one is the cultist choices are, of course, much better. You get better use, in my opinion, out of Ross Mercy. You can put it on Idrians, which is kind of like the main place I've been seeing it. These Idrians come back. If you recur them with Nemo 4, you give them tough with Throne, who you can also take in irregulars. And they're just a fantastic choice with her. You know, they're expensive, they're high value, but they come back. And you can buff their damage a little bit with Curse of Veils, and you can give them Stealth if you want, or Wrath Mercy, depending on your matchup. They've got Repo, so they're just like, they're basically a unit that you can like make whatever you want out of it. You know, like it just takes, they take to buff so well and take to recursion so well. So her Idrians are horrifying to play against because they really do everything. Shooting, charges that, you know, you can get up to like POW 18 if you want against their prey. So she has like, she does that like sort of like Death Star a lot better. Like Rot's Mercy on the flame stuff is fine, but it's not nearly as good because precursors are kind of weak. So I think that's one big advantage there. And you can really abuse what Toros do. Like more than inflamed, you can just do nasty things. I haven't played Gatsby before with her yet, but I imagine the clouds that he brings will help shore up her defensive weaknesses. Like right, like you know, if you've got like terrain issues, and then Gatsby just puts two costume bits down and she walks up behind them and feats. That's going to protect you against most things that aren't Sloan. Sloan will kill you though, so don't do that there. and Infernal Sloan especially, that just seems horrible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd be itching for Fiona Flame if I see Sloan across the table. So that's definitely one matchup where she's going to be a lot weaker is shooting. So I think in a pair setting, right, if I've got Fiona Flame, I'm not necessarily going to go to my second list and go, ooh, I have to be able to solve gun lines. But if I've got Fiona Irregulars, I'm going to go, okay, what can I play in Mercs that has a good time against guns? And it's honestly not an obvious thing. You're kind of leaning on either like Bart, Aurora 2, you know, for because of her flying high, army-wide flying high kind of buff. I should say command range-wide. Or Rahera, even, with Rough Seas. I think that's a bit underplayed right now in Mercs, but I think there's still some work there with, like, a Steelhead build. Or maybe Irregulars. So I think you have to focus more on, like, the shooting mitigation if you're playing her in Irregulars.
So this is only tangentially related to... something you mentioned, but I've had a fair number of questions as a retailer about this, so I want to give an update on some product for people who've maybe been questioning. So you mentioned the Toro. Privateer Press is out of stock on it. They don't have a timeline on when they will be able to restock it. When it might not ever restock. If it does restock, it will be as a new kit or a new product. And there's a few other products besides that that have kind of been in this category. Some that have been out for a while are stuff like the Cage Rager or Gorehound or Rattler. Some that are, I've been out of stock of those for a while, all those I just mentioned. Some that I do have still in stock that will be, going out of stock soon, or the Privateer Press is out of stock on and that they don't have a line of sight on when they'll restock is stuff like the Trenchers, and there's some others that I'm not remembering, but that's just a product update for people that might be curious about that.
And you know, I had heard about that with the Toro, which is unfortunate, of course, because it's such a great jack.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like the be all end all necessarily, like a
right.
Fiona's like, she's taking Gallant, right?
If you're a Crucible card player.
Yes, that's fair. That's 100% agreed there. I was lucky to find a couple, but yeah, they've been tough to source, that's for sure.
Here's some of the other I found my email. Here's a list of things that who knows when or if they will restock. So the Wrassler and Blind Walker, the Battle Boar, the Feral Pure Blood and Warpal Stalker kit, the Nerf and Seraph kit, the Tharn Ravagers, and the Battle Boar. And so if those are ones that you've been considering buying, do them while you can. For example, I think I have like maybe one or two boxes of Tharn Ravagers left, and then I'm not going to be able to restock them.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, jump on that if you can, I guess. Cause,
yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, some of those are pretty important for certain lists.
Yeah, I'll say. Well, especially with the inclusion of more themes where you can like mix and match, like the Scorn one, where you can take that very strong Rage Animus,
right.
Or Primal. Honestly, like both of those beasts are good there. Huh. Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of like maybe covers the strengths and weaknesses of Fiona in those two builds. Maybe you want to mention McBane as another option for like anti-shooting. Less good though now because of how much like Grievous Wounds and Torpid Force there is out there, especially with Strange Bedfellows. Like you're gonna see voids everywhere. But it's something to consider, I guess, for anti-shooting.
Okay. So next question. We have GV Pony. He says, did you get a chance to play your Nemo 4 plus Aurora plus Stormcaller list, and did it work?
Yes and yes. It's what I've been playing exclusively this week. It is really, really nice. I have unfortunately learned that although Conflict Chamber was letting me take Stormcaller trios as a requisition choice, Conflict Chamber, War Room does not. So I'm having to modify the list a little bit. I go, like, for now, I'm only going to be playing 6 instead of 9. What I have added to the list, though, is a 6-4. Because you get some pretty crazy threat ranges. When you add, Aerogenesis, you add, the Iron Head, place thing, the crane, or power lifter. Yeah, that's it. Because Nemo 4 can bring in an Iron Head, to the list. So, already that's an asphyxiate, the threat's 15. He can flicker to 17, although that gets expensive, of course. But now, taking out that third trio of storm callers, I'm right now opting for a free diffuser, which actually adds threat range. So, you have an asphyxiate that could threat up to 19. And the big takeaway from that has been how Arcane Might interacts with his attacks. Because you just buy with his focus and boost with his auroras. So that has been very strong. And the reason the Stormcallers are in, because I've definitely had questions about that, is being able to have one Stormcaller under Aurora's feet charge up potentially up to 11 inches if you cast Aerogenesis. And you should be casting it on feet turn. He'll whack something with his his stupid staff. It's like Pal 7, Mat 4, or whatever. He'll miss. And then he just flies 5 inches over the enemy army, and then he's the perfect triangulate target, who just moves 16 inches, and all immune to free strikes with flight, so pretty much nothing can stop him unless it's like a defensive strike or countercharge. People are generally reticent to countercharge a Stormcaller, so once he's flown over the enemy list, he typically is safe. And then, yeah, you just triangulate, which, for those who don't know, basically lets you create a triangle between three Stormcallers. Each segment of the triangle can be up to 20 inches long. The attack is going to ignore stealth, concealment, and cover. It's magical. It's POW 10, which is not amazing, but and it's RAT 6. You can, however, aim and do it if the model making the triangulate is already within 20 of the other Stormcallers. Destructotron buffs it to hit because it's a lightning attack. And then the Firefly, which you can put on Nemo, which you probably should, buffs the damage, makes that a POW 12. And then your friend, the Hermit, can walk 7, reposition 5, all with flight parry, and adding another -2 armor, which now means your Stormcallers are power 14, rat 8, potentially 10, which is a lot better, and it's amazing at frying infantry. When you do that triangulate, you pick 3 different models in that triangle, and they all get separately attacked, and every Stormcaller can do. Feels weird to be advocating for them in 2020, but they have impressed me in those matchups, like Doom Reavers, even Immortals, you know, post-feat, they can do some damage. They've just been solid. And of course, you have the Void Archons the main thing with the Void Archons and I guess Asphyxius 4, right, is they've got Dark Shroud. So you can either run one of Asphyxius's little buddies, or his Jack, you can take a Stalker with him, or a Void Archon, all the add Dark Shroud. So if it's something that you can hit, either regardless of the +4 defense against shooting or because it's a huge base, now you can have your Stormcaller guns be PAL 16 with a rank 20. Like, that's pretty good for a solo that costs 1.7 points, right? So, the list actually puts out a ridiculous amount of shooting between that and, you know, a tuned up Nemo 4. And you could take a battle group with guns. Right now I'm just taking Conservators with her, with Aurora, because I just love having an 8 Pathfinder. But yeah, it's been surprising. I think a lot of people see it on paper and kind of go, oh, that's kind of a weak list. Obviously, you're leaning on some key power models like the Hermit and the Archons, Nemo and Gatsby, but the Stormcallers add a lot to the list. So I'm keeping them in for now. I think they add very nice infantry clearing ability, and if you apply the buffs properly, they'll also just shoot huge bases down. You know, a PAL 16, nothing to laugh at.
That is true. Have you had many lists in general where you've had Nemo 4 and Asphyxius 4 both in the list together?
This has pretty much been the only one. I think because Asphyxius 4 really wants like a force multiplier, like something, just some kind of buff that really puts him over the edge. So I'm thinking like Shay, Storm Rager, Scar 1 has to be talked about between, you know, her feet and Dark Guidance. Like, that's kind of crazy what he'll start to put out. But in Mercs, I think most of the other casters either want other things to play with. So, like, Fiona wants a super expensive unit. But also, she kind of takes advantage of the recursion from Nemo. But she also doesn't do quite as much for Gatsby, other than, like, I guess there's, like, Roth's Mercy. It's kind of funny. You could put Roth's Mercy on him, leave his 3 Servitors, like, in the deployment zone, just have, like, Asphyxius go up and, like, just have 3 extra damage rolls he can take. I don't know if that's any good, but it kind of makes me laugh. Because there's no, like, they don't have to be in formation, unless I'm mistaken, to use Roth's Mercy. And there is no range restriction on it. Like, you can have one guy on the other side of the board take it. But still, I think she's got enough support, enough things that she's not going to want to take both. But I mean, I'll note too that it's kind of early in the process. I don't tend to play unreleased models. I tend to like to see the rules and then I'll play them. And I even then prefer to have the model in hand. I'm sure there's other like irregulars and Strange Bedfellows maybe combos that'll arise. Like Damiano is one that instantly screams Gatsby 4 to me, but he might also just like have Nemo on board as well. So that one's, I would say, is still TBD. But you can't go wrong with either if you can take them. They're both fantastic, and they're a lot of fun to play. The other thing I think they kind of do to the game is, like, they reduce... So you have more focus to play, on one hand, to play with, right? More boosts, more bot attacks, and that's always cool because, like, those are, like, when you're boosting, it's likely to succeed. When you're buying attacks, it's likely to do damage and kill stuff. But also, like, it kind of, like, brings down the model count a little bit on the table because you're playing these, like, power pieces. It's cool because they just have this big effect on the table. While actually kind of speeding up the game a bit too, because rather than running like 3 units, you're running like 1 unit, and you're moving like a big battle engine guy, and you're like moving his Jack into like a threatening position, and it kind of plays like a bit more fluidly when you've got that. I'm checking up Ross Mercy while I say this. I want to make sure, because it is right. A pretty big difference if you can just like leave the Servitors and the, it's living, so never mind. Forget everything I just said about that. That will not work. You probably don't want to take gas before it, unless you've got a specific one for it. The clouds are nice though, so test it out. Most cellulose, so I don't see myself playing both juniors.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll go ahead and pause things there. We have a lot of really good questions from our Patreon listeners to get to in the next episode.
Cool.
So before we head out, wanted to let people know that currently Discount Games Inc. is selling Private Press product at 30% off. So check us out. Get some of the stuff you've been wanting to buy, and we're still shipping them out, and we'll get stuff out to you. And Mark, I wanted to thank you for joining us and providing us the insight on everything that you're playing right now.
Thank you for having me, and if you are maybe interested in a bit more Signar talk, I do have a cast called In Morrow's Name that we've been posting on the Signar Facebook group. Awesome. So there we pretty much just talk about Flame in the Darkness there. So if that's your deal, maybe have a listen.
Awesome. And then finally, thank you to the people who support us on Patreon. You guys are awesome, and you'll be able to stay tuned to our bonus episode that's coming up.
Great.